I don't know why on the way in this morning, I was thinking about the totality of Parashat Bishalach. And you know, there are so many ups and downs, peaks and valleys. There is so much that goes on in this Sedra. And I looked for a word to describe it. And the description that I came, the word that I feel describes the parasha, is turbulent. And the rest of the shir is going to explain why. But before I begin to this shir, I have to tell you that as I came in this morning, I was transported more than 60 years back in the past. A fellow by the name of Yitzhak Schwartz was with me in yeshiva in Neri Yisrael in Baltimore more than 60 years ago. And he comes popping into my life. All of a sudden, there he is. I walk in the door and there he is. And he's come here with his wife. They're visiting from Kew Garden Hills, wherever it is in that Fashlogana Gullus out there. And it's good to have you over here. Welcome, welcome. Number one. The general feeling we have about Parashat Bishalach, it's Shabbos Shira, the Shabbos of song. There will be Chazanis concerts going on at hotels across the country. Down in Eilat, right by the Yam Suf, they'll be singing and dancing. And here is Klal Yisrael sang, Oz Yoshe Moshe Bnei Yisrael. And after it's all over, it says, "Vatikach Miriam hanevi'ach ot Aaron et hatov biyada." Miriam, the prophetess, the sister of Aaron, she took the drum in hand, and all the women went out singing and dancing, and they too, "Vatam lehem Miriam, shidu l'Hashem, sing before God, ki go o God, sus v'rochlo." He is exalted above the arrogant, having hurled horse with its rider into the sea. All right? There's a little pause in the Sefer Torah. And then, Vayasa Moshe at Yisrael miyamsuf. Moshe caused Israel to journey from the Yamsuf. Vayetzu amidbar Shur. They went out to the desert of Shur. Vayelchu shloshet yomim bamidbar lo motzu mayim. And they went 3 ways into the desert and they didn't find water. I don't know why all the Mefarshim don't simply explode into a paroxysm of questions. We have just been at the peak moment in Jewish history, if not world history. God himself has brought the Egyptian might into the Red Sea. Jews cross on dry land. It's such a miracle. It's much more than a miracle. It's a wonder. It's a pella. There's nothing like it. There never was anything like it. And God takes them out into the desert. And they go 3 days, and they don't have water. You want to try to imagine what it means in the month of Nisan, or for that matter, in any month of the year, going 3 days through the desert, 2 million people, 3 million people, no water, no water. You know what's happened over here? The awesome miracle is completely forgotten. 3 million people are in the process of dying of thirst. Terror! Water for 3 million people in the desert. Do you know what's happened over here? The Jewish people have gone from the peak experience of history, and here they are, they've reached the absolute depths of an entire people on the verge of extinction. What did God have in mind? Didn't he understand that he has to provide water for them? Gets worse. They come to Marah. Can you imagine? From afar they see water and they're waiting. Millions of people are waiting to get there. And they can't drink the water. It was bitter. Because they're bitter. That's why the name of the place was called Morah. The people complained, they should have cried out. What are we going to drink? And he cried out to God, and God showed him some kind of a piece of wood, and he cast it into the waters, and the waters became sweet. There, he established for the nation a chok and a mishpat, and there he tested it. What's the chok? What's the mishpat? What did he test? What did he teach? What happened over here? What happened over here? This was not simply bad planning. God knows he's taking them out into the desert. He knows the people need water. Why doesn't he provide water for them? So the Torah says, Sham sam lo chok u'mishpat v'sham nisahu. A chok and a mishpat. There's a difference between chok and mishpat. If we say a chok is a statute, and mishpat, how do they translate it over here? A decree and an ordinance, okay. Folg mechagang, okay, a decree and an ordinance. V'sham nisahu. And there he tested it. A chok is something which we are incapable of understanding. A chok is beyond our ability. The classic chok in Torah, Pora Aduma, the red heifer. Do we know why a red heifer makes one who is spiritually unclean clean? What makes somebody spiritually unclean? We don't understand. There's no way. Even Shlomo HaMelech, Gemara says, Shlomo HaMelech said, Omarti Echkoma, I said, I'm wise, but it's too far from me. I can't understand Pora Adama. Do we understand Shatnas? You know, there are a lot of things. So what's wrong with wool and linen? What do you mean, what's wrong with wool and linen? Who ever got killed from wool and linen? What difference does it make? But no, it's a chok. We don't understand. But we do it. A mishpat is something which I can understand. I mean, there's many, many laws in Torah that we understand. Kabeda tevicha v'timecha, we can even understand keep Shabbos, all of the laws of damages and torts. I mean, there's a great deal of Torah which is very clearly understood. But then there are aspects of Torah that are not. They are beyond our ability to understand. I believe it was Rav Soloveitchik who once said that whatever is true in Torah is true in life. And it works the other way. Whatever is true in life also finds its expression in Torah. In life also, we have chok and we have mishpat. Mishpat, a beautiful day, the smile of a baby. We understand that. Health. Peace. Prosperity. Well-being. All this is mishpat. We can understand all of that. But is that Is that what life is all about? There is a flip side to life as well. There's illness, there's suffering, there's war, there is death, there is pestilence, there is plague, there's hatred. We don't understand that so well. That's the chok. That's the chok of life. Life isn't all mishpat. It's not all a bowl of cherries. There's suffering, there's difficulty. What the Rabbeinu Shalom has just done is the following. At the Yam Suf, the Jewish people experienced the most awesome deliverance of all. They had reached the very peak. And what they have to know when they reach the very peak is that that's not going to be the norm in Jewish history. As they come out of the Yam Suf, they begin the march of Jewish history. It's not going to be mishpat. There's going to be a lot of chok in that history. There's going to be suffering. There will be death. There will be hatred. There will be war. They have to learn right now. Don't for a moment make the mistake of thinking that all of Jewish history is going to be Kriyat Yam Suf. We cry out to God, the seas are split, our enemies are destroyed, and it's all over. That's not the way it's going to be. You're setting out now on a journey, at least that we know 3,500 years worth of it. One might possibly say that there was a lot more chok than mishpat in Jewish history. If anything, I would say the mishpat has begun to rise in intensity and in strength. We are not the people we were for 2,000 years. We are not nowhere close. They can hate and despise us all over the world, but we are, Baruch Hashem, a strong and powerful and a mighty people and getting stronger day by day. But they have to learn at the very beginning, Shom, Somlo, Chok, Umishpat. There, God established for the Jewish people that Jewish history is going to have a lot that we will not be able to understand. There will be a lot of chok in Jewish history. And there will be mishpat in Jewish history. Now, I would have thought that the pasuk should say, Shom somlo mishpat v'chok. What were the two events here? The splitting of the Red Sea, that's mishpat of the highest order. We understand it. We have no difficulty comprehending. It's great. God saves this people. And then afterwards, 3 days and there's no water. So why does the pasuk say, Shom somlo chok u'mishpat? It should have said, Shom somlo mishpat v'chok. So it occurred to me, maybe this pasuk is a pasuk of great prophecy. What the pasuk is saying is that the most awesome, frightening, a terrible chok will come in history, the Shoah, and afterwards will come mishpat. God is foretelling them that there will be a period of chok. And after that period of chok, there will no longer be chok anymore. It's all going to be mishpat. It's going to be uphill for the Jewish people. This is what they have to know as they set out on the great journey. Glorious, difficult, tragic, triumphant history of 3,500 years. I would say that in these two words, chok and mishpat, we have a description of Parshat Beshalach. I called it turbulent because it is turbulent. The Parsha begins with the Jewish people, well, sort of being thrown out of Mitzrayim by Paro. They're marching out triumphantly. The joy, the happiness. They've just celebrated the Seder. We talked about the Seder in Mitzrayim last week. And there it is, there on the bank of the Yam Suf, ready somehow or other to cross, and an attack. All of the Jewish people are concentrated in one spot on the beach, and the mighty forces of Paro thundering after them. They're caught in a vice. This is worse than Dunkirk, you understand? There aren't thousands of fishing boats that are going to pick them up. On one side is the dark, black, ominous sea. On the other side, the entire might of Egypt. They're caught in the middle. There it is. They're on the beach. The Jewish people are about to be destroyed. That's turbulence. And then, Daber b'nei Yisrael v'Yisrael, speak to the children of Israel and let them journey. So watch, there are valleys and there are peaks throughout the Seder. After we pass this period from peak of Kriyas Yam Suf to the depths of no water, they're going to go further. They're going to complain again about water. They're going to complain about no food. And what do we need more than at the end of the Seder? The sneak attack of Amalek. They have to go out to war. And I'll tell you, as I was driving here, I better start thinking about other things because I got a little unnerved. The beginning of the Seder says that God took them a circuitous route. Vayhi b'shalach paru et ha'am. That's on the second page. Not the second side, the second page. There you have the beginning of Parshat B'Shalach. Vayehi B'Shalach Paro et Ha'am. When Paro sent out the people, v'lo nochem elekim derech eretz plishtim, he did not lead them by way of the Plishtim, the land of Plishtim, ki korovu, because it's close. Ki amar elekim, because God had said, pen yinochem ha'am, maybe the people will change their minds, b'rotam milchomu, when they see war, v'shavu mitzchem, and will go back to Egypt. That was the beginning of the Seder. You know, it didn't bother me until I was driving here this morning. It didn't bother me. But wait a minute. At the end of the Seder, they do see war. God is concerned and takes them through a circuitous route lest they see war. And they do see war. We don't hear, by the way, at the end of the Seder that they say, let's go back to Mitzrayim. Moshe Rabbeinu takes over. And he tells Yoshua, go out and choose men. Go out and fight for the first time in their lives. Jews fight. They fight. So I say the Parashat B'Shalach is up and down. Because all of Parashat B'Shalach is summed up in two words. Chok and Mishpat. Then I was thinking of my mother, Allah Shalom. Then, remember, they used to put out food for the Feigalach? Your parents didn't put out food for the birds? And here it is, I'm thinking, why did they do it on Parshat B'Shalach? Why did they do it? So I was wondering, maybe it's because if Parshat B'Shalach here, Tu B'Shvat is not far behind, representing sort of the beginnings of summer. By the way, I parked on, where is it? What's that seat over there? Not on Lazarov. Sokolov. I knew it was a love at the end. On Sokolov. And I walked through the park. And you know what I heard as I walked through the park? I heard the birds. You haven't heard them for a long time. Could be they were out there, but we had our windows closed. It's cold, you know, it's cold. But I heard the birds chirping in the park on Sokolov. You know what that reminds me of? I'm going to get all choked up now. There was a great writer by the name of Uri Elitzur. I'm not talking about Amos Oz. Uri Elitzur lived in Ofra. He was one of the first settlers of Ofra, a very, very gifted writer. He passed away a few years ago. Yom Ha'atzmaut was 2 weeks before he passed away, and he spoke in Ofra. And he described the fact that we're living a miracle in this country. A lot of people don't get it. Then he says, he describes how he and his wife moved into Ofra, and they removed stones and they put up tents. And a few months after they were there, he wakes up in the morning and he wakes up and his wife, he says, something's happened. Something's going on. What is it? And then they get it. The birds returned to Ofra. They heard the chirping of birds over Ofra. So Bishalach is a parsha of Chok and Mishpat. It has tragedy, it has fear, and it also has joy and great victory. In a sense, as I say, that describes all of Jewish history. It's Chok and Mishpat. And following the most frightening and awesome Chok of all, we're going through a period of great Mishpat. I've said it a number of times in the past, it just occurs to me now. Great shiur that I heard from Rav Avrom Palm, who was the Rav Shiva of Torah Vadas, who was my Rebbe. He was the Rebbe of my two older brothers. We were three brothers. He established a principle, a law in Jewish history. The law in Jewish history is that following every period of great suffering, God embraces his people, showers them with love in order to rebuild the relationship between him and them and to give them encouragement and strength. And he described four periods in Jewish history. Period one was the time of Chizkiyahu, king of Yehuda. The 10 tribes had all been cast out of Eretz Yisrael. All that was left in Eretz Yisrael was Yerushalayim. The forces of Sanherib surround the city. The city is about to fall into the hands of Nebuchadnezzar and the Assyrians. And Vayehi b'chatzi alayla, in the middle of the night, down swoops the angel of death and wipes out the Assyrian camp. And Rav Palm went on further to say that when God begins the embrace could even be a period in which Mashiach will come. And that's why the Gemara says that Chizkiyahu, king of Yehuda at the time, could have been Mashiach if not for... there were problems. He described two other periods. Rabbi Ak, by the way, I didn't even plan on saying this today. How did I get into this? You know, I get myself into all these things. But once I'll say, I'll just finish it. The period of Rabbi Akiva, Israel suffered terribly under the heel of Rome. That's why Rabbi Akiva, with Bar Kokhba, went out and rebelled against Rome. Because life, Jewish life, had become impossible under Rome. They had to rebel. Rabbi Akiva thought that Bar Kokhba was Mashiach. Why did he think that Bar Kokhba was Mashiach? So Rav Palm said, because the suffering under Rome was so terrible that following this suffering, there has to be the great embrace, as a father embraces a son who has suffered. The third period was the period of the of the expulsion from Spain. 1492, the expulsion from Spain. That was a destruction of one of the most glorious Jewish communities in the world. And 3 years later, we talked about it some months ago. There was the expulsion from Portugal. Many Jews from Spain went to Portugal. Then they were thrown out of Portugal. I think I've mentioned it then because there was an item in the paper about some foreign minister of Portugal who came here and said that he apologizes to the Jewish people for the expulsion from Portugal. And he made the profound statement, "It was such a stupid thing we did. It was so stupid. Both Spain and Portugal became nothings, and they remain nothings at Hayom Hazeh, and will continue to remain nothings, because they threw out the Jews." But then there were those who moved to Italy, those who made it to Turkey, those who went to Amsterdam. But then there was a movement to Eretz Yisrael. The Arizal, the Beis Yosef, the Kabbalists of Tzfat, and one of them, Reb Shlomo Alkovitz, wrote Lecha Dodi, "Next time you say Lecha Dodi, think of what it's being said." The Lecha Dodi expresses the idea that he feels the footsteps of Mashiach. This is the middle of the 16th century. He feels it. Ben Yishai, Beit Halachmi, the one from Bethlehem, the son of Yishai. David, he feels it. Uri, Uri, awake, awake. Hit Orini, hit Orini. You know, Migdash Melech, Ir Melucha, Eret Yerushalayim, Kumi Tzi, get up and get out. Mitocha Fecha, from the very depths. It's so messianic, and I mean it in a very positive sense, you know. So Rav Palm said, because after the suffering from the expulsion of Jews from Spain and Portugal, they knew that there must come an embrace. Of all things historically, he said, at the time of the Chachmei Tzfat in the 16th century, after the expulsion, all of a sudden they come up with the idea to reestablish the smicha of Moshe Rabbeinu and create a Sanhedrin. Why did it all of a sudden come up at that time? And there was a great debate about the smicha. And he says, because they felt, ot, 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 this is it. Mashiach, he's coming. Because the great embrace. He ended his shiur with saying, in our time, after the Shoah, Hakomas Medinas Yisrael, and those were the three words he used, you understand? Hakomas Medinas Yisrael was the great embrace. Is that the way many of his Talmidim look at things today? I'm not going to talk about that. But I heard it. I was there. I was there. So this is it. Parashat Bishalach is Chok and Mishpat. Chok and Mishpat. And we are the ultimate. We're the Mishpat that comes after the most frightening Chok of all. Part one. Part two. Number two. By the way, as I was thinking about the parasha, so many things came through my head. It was a little, it became either a little confusing or a little exciting for me. But here I come to, my wife always says, this is the pasuk I love more than any other pasuk in Torah. The truth is, I even love the Rashi on this pasuk even more. Zekeli vanveyu elekei avi varu emenu. It's in the Shira at the Yamsuf. Klal Yisrael are able to point and say, Zekeli, this is my God. They saw him A maidservant at the sea saw more than the prophet saw. They saw God. Awesome. Vanveyuan, I will exalt him, I will beautify him, I will build a nove, a home to him. Elokeyovi Vadomenu, the God of my father, and I will raise and uplift him. So that's the pasuk. Zekeli Vanveyu Elokeyovi Vadomenu. Incidentally, because I like the pasuk so much, in my shul in Har Nof, Kilat Zichron Yosef, the parochet has one pasuk on it, Zekeli Vanveyu Elokeyovi Vadomenu. And then my wife said, they should have put the Rashi also on the parochet. Let's just take a look at the Rashi of Elokeyovi. It's down at the bottom, it's underlined. Elokeyovi, the God of my father, who's there? He is, this God that I see is the God of my father. V'arom amenu, and I will exalt him. Here comes the awesomeness of the Elokeyovi, another Rashi on Elokeyovi. Lo ani tchilat hakedusha, I am not the beginning of this sanctity. I'm not the source of this sanctity. Ele murzeket v'omedet li hakedusha, the sanctity is established before me. Ve'elukuto alai, and his divinity, his godliness is upon me. Mi yimei avotai, from the days of my fathers. From the days of my father. I'm troubled by the pasuk. People who see God with their own eyes and are able to say, Zekeli vanveyu, they have to say, and he's also the God of my fathers. They most probably saw more than their fathers saw. Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov didn't see what they saw. Why do they have to say, Elokeyovi Vadomenu? See here, this is also a story he said a long time ago. It was one of those days in the middle 90s, when I decided the time has finally come. I have to clean my desk. Understand? I have to clean my desk. And I began the job of cleaning my desk. And one of the first things that I came to was a calendar. It was a calendar from 1986. And this was 1996. It's 10 years later, so I decided, you know, throw it into the garbage. But we're hoarders. Nobody looked. I picked it up out of the garbage can to take a last look. It was one of those calendars that has, you know, Gute Werte down at the bottom, aphorisms. And I open up, and I see something that just struck me. Marshall McLuhan, the Canadian Marshall McLuhan. Marshall McLuhan said, I wouldn't have seen it if I hadn't believed it. Now, this is a sentence that has to get into your kishkat, you understand? I wouldn't have believed it. I wouldn't have seen it if I hadn't believed it. We have been taught from our childhood on, seeing is believing. Seeing is believing. Okay? Along comes Marshall McLuhan and says, what are you talking about? Believing is seeing. It works the other way around. If I wouldn't have believed it, I wouldn't have seen it. So I thought to myself, I remember that day, I thought to myself, this is such a great vort. Klal Yisrael didn't have anybody wise enough to say a great vort like this. So I remember it was the month of Elul. And you know the Rebbe Yishon has a great sense of humor. He takes the neshama out of you. I come to shul, daven the whole davening. End of davening, we will say l'david. At the end of l'david, lule hemanti lidot betuv Hashem be'eretz ha'chaim. If I wouldn't have believed it, I wouldn't have seen God in the land of the living. I looked up at the Aron Kodesh where it said zekeli v'amdeyeret zekab. Davra Melech knew it before Marshall McLuhan. But then I looked at the Urim Kodesh and I said, why do I need the pasuk in LeDavid? Zekeli vanveyu elokeyofi v'arobimenu. Klal Yisrael who see God and point at him. Not enough. You know why they saw him? Because he was Elokei Avi. Lo ani tchilas hakedusha. I'm not the beginning of all of this sanctity. It started and I have it with me in my neshama from the days of my fathers. Because I believed I was able to see him. And if you don't believe, the most awesome things can happen to you. And you don't see a thing. You're as blind as a bat. You don't know a thing. Anybody who can say that the history of the last 70 years in this country is not one continual ness has got to have his amunah tested. What are you talking about? It's awesome. It's awesome what's going on around here. And we happen to be, we happen to be in a period of God is pouring out literally. He is pouring out his blessing upon us. We don't feel it so much yet in Yerushalayim, although a few days ago we did. My son calls me from the Galil yesterday. Ah, it's pouring here. It was unbelievable. He says he never saw anything like this. What is it? The Kinneret has gone up. Last week the Kinneret went up nearly 20 centimeters. It's going up and going up and going up. We used to live... We lived for a few years up in the Galil. We used to watch the Kinneret, and we used to go out with my wife to the Nechalim, the rivers, the streams. You have to see the streams right now. They are an awesome rush of water. God's blessing. Well, the Keovi, God's blessing. He's pouring it out. By the way, this Rashi also was a trigger for me to understand a great deal more. It was with this Rashi, with the help of Marshall McLuhan, that I was able to answer another serious question that bothered me. The Rambam describes Avraham Avinu as being the great genius who discovered God in a world that for generations had been godless. They had forgotten him. Famous Rambam in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, Bimei Enosh Tov Anoshim Tov Gedolah, the days of Enosh. Adam, Sheis, Enosh. People made a mistake. They began to serve the heavenly bodies until God was completely forgotten. And the world continued in such confusion for many generations, Adshe Nolad Eitan Zeh, until the Mighty One was born, and that is Avraham Avinu. And yet as a child, he began to question and doubt, where did all this come from? And as a child, his parents worshipped idols, and he worshipped idols with them. But Avraham Avinu suffered from emunah problems. He couldn't believe. He couldn't believe what the world believed until he achieved. He was an intellectual giant. He achieved the knowledge of God. Mishneh Navos says Avraham Avinu was tested by God. Asor Nisyonos, 10 tests that Avraham had to undergo. Avraham has to be tested by God? The Avraham who achieved a knowledge of God? On his own, he needs to be tested. This pasuk gave me the answer. Avram's great accomplishment is he was able to say, "Zekeli vanveyu, I've discovered you. I see you. I know you. You've created the whole world." But Avraham Avinu is incapable of saying, Elokei Avi, the God of my father. What he has is intellectual knowledge of God. He does not have pure faith, emunah. He cannot say, Elokeinu, or Elokai v'Elokei Avotai? How is he going to get that great faith that keeps us going throughout all of history? You know how he's going to get it? He's going to undergo 10 tests. And you know what the common denominator of all the 10 tests? What that denominator, that common denominator is? They all fly in the face of rational thinking. God tells him, leave your place and go to some other place on the face of this earth, leaving him with the impression that there is one other place on earth where God is more than he is here. But wait a minute, God, I discovered you here in Ur-Kasdim, surrounded by all of these idolaters. I discovered the God of an entire world. You're trying to tell me this bit about Eretz Yisrael, you understand? Or whatever country, you don't know yet what the country is. In Canaan, you're more than you are. This flies in the face of all logic. The question becomes, is Avram a man of logic alone, or is he also a man of faith? Every one of the 10 tests is going to test the extent to which he is rooted and grounded in his intellect. He has to make a great leap forward. And the great leap forward is when the man of intellect, the great genius, becomes the man of faith. Because if he's only going to remain the man of intellect, it may very well be that the God whom he worships or prays to is not the God there, but he's worshiping his own genius and his own intellect. Avram Avinu is going to undergo those tests until ultimately God is going to say, Ata Yadati, now I know that you're God-fearing. There's a lot more to this, but this is only being said in passing. This is what the Zekeli Van Veyu, Elekei Ovi Vado Memenu. Can you imagine these people, Klal Yisrael, the Yamsuf, are able to point and say, this is my God. And why could they do it? Why is it that they see God? Because he is a Lekei Ovi. Lo Anit Kilat HaKadusha. I'm not the one with whom all of this begins. Began all the way back there. That's why in our Shemon Esrei we say, Elokeinu ve'Elokei Avoteinu. Lekei Avraham, Lekei Yitzhak, Lekei Yaakov. That's why when a non-Jew comes to convert, the Rambam says Bedin is supposed to tell him or her that you should know the Jews suffer. Jews are persecuted. Jews are pursued throughout the world. Why do you want to join these people? Whatever got into you to want to join these people? If the prospective convert is going to say, I know, and I'm unworthy to be part of such a great people, Mekablino told me yad, we accept him immediately as a ger. What happens if a ger would come to the Betin and say, listen, I've studied all the religions. I've studied Torah. I see that the truth is with Torah. I live Kansas City. And I want to continue to live in Kansas City. I'll have Glad Koshimit and Chol of Yisrael flown in from New York. I'm going to be a Jew like any other Jew. Incidentally, God, I don't like Jews, you understand? I want to have my cake and eat it too. I want to be Jewish and hate the rest of them. No, that was just a little comic angle over here. What happens if a guy says, I don't want to be part of Klal Yisrael. I just want to be a Jew. I want to keep Torah. Unacceptable. He has to be ready to become part of the history of the Jewish people. That's why the Rambam says, don't you know that Jews are persecuted and suffer? And he has to say, yes, I know, and despite that, I want to be part of the Jewish people. Why does he have to be part of the Jewish people? Why can't he just be Jewish? Because if he's just going to be Jewish, without being part of the Jewish people, he can only say Elokeinu. He cannot say Elokei Avoteinu. And if he can't say Elokei Avoteinu, unacceptable. Because if all of his Yiddishkeit is his intellect, you can't trust intellect further than you can throw it. Because what the intellect sees today as being intelligent and acceptable, tomorrow it may not be so. You can't trust the intellect. There is no eternity to intellect. But to faith, there is. That's why he has to say that he's becoming part and parcel of the Jewish people. Their history becomes his history. Their past is his past. And therefore the Chacham says that a ger can say Shmona Esrei. He can say Elokeinu Elokei Avoteinu. Because he does not simply become one who also performs mitzvahs. He becomes part of a family, part of a Jewish people. He's embraced by that people. Their history becomes history, his history. Their future becomes his future. All right. Oh, God. I haven't scratched the surface yet, you know, but let's... I'll do one more. There's a great Ramban. There are a lot of great Rambans. All Rambans are great, but some are greater than them all. So here's a great Ramban. And by the way, I don't even know why I said that. The greatest Ramban of all is the last Ramban in Parshas Bo. One of these days we may learn it. But all right, here it is. Let's take a look. Number 3, Uparo Hikriv. Paro is drawing close. They're pursuing the Jewish people. Israel lifted their eyes. And behold, Mitzrayim and Oseh Achrei Mitzrayim is journeying after them. They were very frightened. And the children of Israel cried out to God. Now listen to this. Listen to this. And they said to Moshe, Hamiblien kvarim b'mitzrayim l'kachtonu l'amut b'midbar. There aren't enough graves in Egypt that you took us out to die in the Bidbar. Mazot asita lanu. What is this that you've done to us? Lahutzionu Mitzrayim. What did you do to us? You know, they just got up from the Seder and they've been journeying out, marching out to freedom. God, what did you do? This is what we said to you in Egypt, Lamar. We said to you, Chadal Mimenu, leave us alone with your shtick. V'navdat Mitzrayim, we will serve Egypt. Ki tov lano, avodet Mitzrayim imutenu b'midbar. It's better for us to serve, be slaves to Egypt than to die in the desert. The Ramban instinctively feels the problem in these psukim. And the problem that he deals with in these psukim, I'm sure you many other psukim in this sedra where the same thing is going to exist. Just before it says that they cry out to God. And in the very next pasuk they say, what did you do? What did you take us out? Who wanted this? We want to die here in the desert. This is total confusion. So take a look at number 4, the Ramban. This is a classic Ramban. And if you know what the Ramban establishes over here, you will be able to learn the parasha in a much clearer manner. Vayiru miod vayitzaku b'nei Yisrael Hashem vayomra hamibli ein kvarim b'mitzchayim. Says the Ramban, einenu nireh, does not seem right. Ki b'nei odom atzoakim al Hashem, the people that crying out to God, lahushiyam, to save them, yivatu b'yeshua, simply reject completely the salvation asher osa lahem that he did for them. V'yomru, and they would say, ki tov lahem, shalohi tzilam, better if you wouldn't have saved us. How can the same person be saying, how can the same person be crying out to God, tefillah, saying tilim, and then he turns around and says, who needed all this? Who needed all this? We were, things were great in Egypt. What did you take us out? The correct way to understand these psukim, we have to explain that there were divisions amongst the people. There were different groups. And the pasuk tells us what the various different groups did. Oma, pasuk says, one group of the people, so eket al Hashem, cries out to God. V'achas makheshed b'nevio, and the other rejects his prophet. V'enomode b'Yeshua, and does not thank him for the salvation that was done to them. V'yomim, and they said, ki tov lehem shelo hitzilum, it would have been better if he wouldn't have saved them. V'alzot katov, that's why it says in Tehillim, it says, the description of Kriyat Yam Suf, it says, v'yamru al yam b'yam suf. There was rebellion against God in the Yam Suf. L'kach yavzer akosuf b'nei Yisrael pam acheret. Yeah. Says, let's read that first pasuk again. Uparu hikriv, vayis'u b'nei Yisrael et einayim, v'hinei Mitzrayim nosei achreim, vayiru miyod, vayitzaku b'nei Yisrael al Hashem. Why does it have to say b'nei Yisrael a second time? The pasuk started talking about b'nei Yisrael. B'nei Yisrael lifted their eyes. All the pasuk had to say was vayitzaku al Hashem. They cried out to God. So the Ramban says, you know why they repeat B'nai Yisrael again? To tell you precisely who it was that cried out to God. There were those who were called B'nai Yisrael. There were others who are called throughout the Sedra, Ha'am. The was not the same as B'nai Yisrael. And that's why back to the Ramban, V'lakach Yachazir HaKosef, that's why the Pasuk says the second time, B'nai Yisrael, Pam Acheret. Vayitzaku b'nei Yisrael al Hashem, ki hatovim b'hem, because the good ones tzok al Hashem, cried out to God. Vanishorim moru b'dvaro, and the others rebelled. Ulakach oma achakach, and that's why it says afterwards, what we say in davening every day. And I have it, I have the whole thing down at number 7. Go straight down the bottom. Watch the psukim. It's right before the Shira. Vayosha Hashem b'yom ahu et Yisrael me'ad Mitzrayim. God saved on that day Israel from the hands of Egypt. Vayar Yisrael Mitzrayim mes al sfat hayam. And Israel saw Egypt dead at the seashore. Vayar Yisrael. How many times did we have Yisrael over here? One, two, the third. Israel saw the great hand that God did in Egypt. Vayiru ha'om et Hashem. The great change takes place. You know who finally fears God? The Vayaminu b'Hashem uva Moshe avdo. And they believed in God and in his servant Moshe. I once explained, why does it say that they believe, where does Moshe come into the picture? I think this is the only place where Moshe Rabbeinu appears in the Haggadah. He doesn't disappear in the Haggadah, but I think this pasuk is in the Haggadah. Because take a quick look to your right. To your right, there's a mechilta. Number 6. Dalit Kitin Nasu Odalayam. Israel was divided into 4 groups on the Yam. We've improved on that. We have 25 parties. By next week, there may be 35 parties. You understand? Okay. Here it started off just with 4 parties, divided into 4. Achat Omeret, one group said, Lipol Alayam, that it's all over. They're going to commit national suicide, throw themselves into the sea. V'achat omeret, and another one said, no, what else? Let's go back to Mitzrayim. L'chzul Mitzrayim. Yeah. I mean, this is really, if you want to see today, Israel, right here, these few lines in the Mechilta. V'achat omeret, one says, lasot milchama kenegdo. Somebody comes up with the bright idea, let's fight. Let's fight back. How do you like that? That's a novel idea. V'achat omeret, and another one says, nitzavach kenegdan. Let's just make a lot of noise. We'll confuse them. We know how to do this, you understand? Can you imagine 2 million Jews screaming? I would imagine that the Egyptian horses would just turn around and go running back. That was it. Four groups at the Yamsuf. So now, Zot Shamra, the one that says, Lipol Alayam, God, Moshe tells them in the name of God, Nemalahem, Hit Yatzfu Ru'u et Yishuat Hashem. Don't throw yourself any place. Just stand fast and you will see the salvation of God. Zu Shamra, the one that said, Noshuv L'Mitzrayim, let's go back to Egypt. Nemalahem, God says to them, Ki Asher Yitem Mitzrayim, as you have seen Egypt today, you will never see them again. You're not going back. Zu Shamra, the group that said, Naseh Milchama, let's wage war, Kenegdo against them, Nemalahem, it says to Moshe says in the name of God to them, Hashem Yilachem Lachem, God is going to wage war for you. Zu Shamra, Nitzaveh Kenegdo, the group that said, let's scream, let's make a lot of noise, Nemalahem, it says to them, Vatem Tacharishun, you remain silent. What bothered me is, of all the things, there had to be a fifth group. Why wasn't there a fifth group? Let's ask Moshe. He's the one that got us here. He's the one that's been doing everything. All the Geisei Chachomim, you understand? All the Geisei Chachomim. We're going to make a centrist party. The great white messiah, Gantz, says we have to decide what we're ready to give up. What world is he? He's living someplace back in the 80s or the 90s. He's out of his cotton picking mind. He is going to fail. What we're going to give up. If the 25 years of a Vashlugana Oslo, we're going to go give something up. 13 years after the disengagement. Is he crazy? All right, I have to get that in because this was bothering me a great deal. It was not planned. I didn't plan this. Why wasn't there a group that said, let's ask Moshe? Moshe has to get up there and tell them, listen, guys, stay where you are. You're not going anyplace. You're not going to make a lot of noise. Atem tachadishin, you remain silent. God is going to... The following morning, when they see Mitzrayim dead al Sfat Hayam, all of a sudden the people realize the only one who talked sense last night on the beach was Moshe. Vayaminu b'Hashem uva Moshe avdo. They all realized it. The Sedra is a turbulent Sedra. I think that word still describes it. And you know what? It's all part of the fashioning of a people. I think it was Heinrich Heine who said, this is coming back from Amish all the way back here, he said that I disliked Moshe because he prohibited the plastic arts. Moshe was opposed to sculptures, and I thought, you know, a barbarian doesn't know what art really is. Until I realized that the greatest work of art is fashioning a great nation out of a slave people. Vayaminu b'Hashem uva Moshe avdo. Okay, everybody.